This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. 8 centuries ago, when China was still very much an alien civilization to Europeans, 3 merchants from Venice traveled along the Silk Road through modern-day Middle East and into China. One of those merchants, Marco Polo, returned 24 years later to tell his story. Marco Polo, A Very Modern Journey is a 3-part Al Jazeera documentary that attempts to retrace Marco Polo's journey. I am pleased to have series producer Shu Yun Sun on the line with us to talk about her latest project. Let's start with why Marco Polo and why now, because there's a new Netflix series as well about Marco Polo.
I think it's a really interesting question because Marco Polo is really the most famous traveler in history. I think it's not just our age is fascinated by him, because when you look at Marco Polo's account and the book he wrote about his travel when he returned to Venice, and there were so many additions in the film. We saw the manuscripts, you know, from 600-700 years ago, the Italian version, the French version, the German version, the Spanish version, the English version. I think he stood for the courage, the curiosity about the unknown. I think that is in us, in every one of us. But I think he embodied it and did it, as you said. It was 24 years on the road to the most distant place at the time. And even today, I think, you know, still so remote in this globalized age, we seem to know each other or know about other cultures, but we really don't know. So I think for me, Marco Polo is that symbol of exploration and the curiosity and, of course, knowledge.
Right, but the world Marco Polo traveled is vastly different to the one we now inhabit. Is it possible for us to relate how the world we inhabit today and how it relates to his world?
That is really interesting, because that's when we started the film. That's exactly the question I asked myself, because, as you say, Netflix is doing a drama turning Marco Polo into a Kung Fu monk, probably. But we are very much based on history, on facts. So I think it's important to see the link. I think there is a very, very big link. That's why the film is called Marco Polo, The Modern Journey. Because when Marco Polo traveled, China at the time was very, very, very much developed, much more than Europe. That's what caught him by surprise. You know, coming from Venice, the richest city in Europe at the time, and he thought we had everything, and with the empire trading into all parts of the Mediterranean, in the Middle East, the Central Asia. But when he got to China, when he got to Beijing, Beijing was just built as the capital of the Mongol Empire. And when he got to Hangzhou, the city of the paradise, the sophistication, the money, and the kind of cultured life, that really caught him by surprise. You know, that was the moment when he realized Europe was not the center of the world. Here, there is invented paper money for merchant. That was really exciting, right? And here, they had invented gunpowder. Here is the invented printing press. This was, you know, the age of enlightenment, but, you know, hundred years before Europe. So I think that kind of discovery was Marco Polo took away to Venice and to Europe. I think that's kind of enthusiasm and, at this discovery was really, really apparent in his entire account. And that's what later on, the readers, including us, get it. But today, if you look at China, after, you know, centuries of a decline, China is up again and catching up with the rest of the world. And we took a young Italian student and the young Marco Polo, we call him, on the journey. And his discovery is just extraordinary. So that kind of parallel, but that's not just in China. In other parts of the world, for example, today you hear about Iraq all the time, the terrible things that is happening in that place. But in Marco Polo's time, just before, you know, he traveled through the place was razed to the ground by the Mongol army. So it was terrible war happening, and Baghdad, which was the center of a very advanced center for Islamic culture, was literally destroyed. The books were burned, a lot of people were killed, and he said the river was red with blood and black with the ashes from the burned books. And if I'm sure your audience watches the news, and it's a terrible thing that's happening there. So the history and the today has a sort of a remarkable sort of parallel. And I think it is sad for me to think, with all the passage of time, sometimes we don't seem to learn the lessons of history.
As Marco Polo traveled across regions and different landscapes, the locals speak very different languages. How did he communicate over the language barriers?
I think this is the secret of the merchants of Venice. Because I think two things that really, really help him. Because at Marco Polo's time, Venice had already built up a vast trading empire from the Mediterranean, stretching to the Black Sea, all to the Central Asia, today's, you know, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, that area, the old Silk Road. So I think the merchants of the Silk Road from, you know, 1st century AD, when the Silk Road officially, let's say, opened, I think they always had a way of traveling. But in Marco Polo's time, I think what was good, it was also the time when Mongols built the biggest empire in history, stretching from, you know, China all the way to the gate of Vienna to today's Syria, and they controlled Iran for over 100 years, Iraq, and Turkey for over 150 years. So this was the biggest empire in the world, and within the empire, the Mongols were very clever. They knew they did not trade, so they knew they'd rely on traders, merchants, to bring whatever they needed. So they provided a very, very secure sort of environment and for the merchants to travel through. And as you probably know, and Kublai Khan gave a golden pass to Marco Polo when he finished the journey. It was a gold pass, which authorized everywhere he went through to provide food, horses, you know, security. So I think, you know, merchants, they are clever. They always find a way. But during the Mongol time, it was particularly a favorable time for merchants.
Marco Polo also traveled through the Straits of Malacca on his way back to Venice. What did he write about Southeast Asia?
I think this is a place where, you know, from the very early age, especially during the Mongol time, when the Sea Silk Road, we talk about land Silk Road, Sea Silk Road, and it was really, really very, very busy. I think Marco Polo, of course, was fascinated about this route. The reason that we did not, in the film, we did not go there is because scholars were not really certain how, you know, he returned or whether he indeed went to all the places that he mentioned in the book. Because, of, for example, he mentioned a huge amount of places in India. But the scholars really questioned if he went there. But having said that, the places you mentioned during the Mongol time, even before the Mongol time, during the Song Dynasty, we're talking about the 10th century AD, that was really, really popular trade, spices, and porcelain, and the lacquer. All these were very, very important for the economy of China and for the whole region in the 12th century.
I'm speaking today to Shu Yun Sun. She is the executive producer of the Marco Polo Project. Coming up after the break, we'll talk more about how Europe reacted to Marco Polo's book, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you have just joined us, on The Bigger Picture today is Shu Yun Sun, who, in addition to her role as the executive producer of the Marco Polo Project, is also a writer, filmmaker, and special China advisor to the Institute of Strategic Dialogue in London. You mentioned there is a certain level of skepticism among scholars in the details of Marco Polo's book. He returned to Venice 24 years after traveling, as I mentioned, and he was captured and imprisoned by his enemies. How did the world come to know of his stories, and how did Europe react to his book?
I think the journey itself was extraordinary by all accounts. Can you imagine a young man, only 17, and travel with his father to this land, and after 24 years, he came back and told the world about this place, people, and his discovery, which everybody thought was so outrageous, it could be, well, just made up of stories. So what happened is, I think it was a story because Marco Polo was illiterate. And so he did not write the book, actually. So when he was in prison, at the time Italy was in war with the neighboring city to control the Mediterranean Sea route and Venice was lost, so Marco Polo was captured. And in the prison, he had to pass time because he was there for a year, and so he entertained the prisoners with his stories of his travel. And one of his fellow prisoners, a writer, a romantic writer, said, "Why don't I take it down?" So this was the origin of his book. But as soon as it came out, as soon as the book came out, it was such a hit in Europe. No, we had in the Italian National Library, we had Marco Polo's, early Marco Polo manuscripts. And there are so many versions because, this was before the age of printing. So each person who find it fascinating commissioned a copyist to write down the words and then to paint the pictures. And that's how the early manuscripts survived. But when they commissioned it, if you are a merchant, you want to talk about more about merchants. If you're a religious institution, you want to talk about a faith. So different people have a different opinion. And so Marco Polo's versions, there are so many of them. So I think that for historians, that was both interesting but also confusing. What was the truth? But what came out of this whole thing was this very, very detailed knowledge, almost encyclopedic knowledge of the first and the foremost about the merchants, about the goods, about commodities, about the treasures of all the places he went through. In fact, it could be, if you look at the early Venetian version of the Marco Polo's account, it was almost like a trader and merchant's guide to China and to all the places along the way. Because we were told by the curator in the library that in 15th century, there was a copy of Marco Polo's account on the bridge of the Rialto, the most famous bridge of Venice. And people probably, look it up and saying, wow, when we should go there, we should look up for these things. So it was a really detailed account of the journey. But of course, there are lots of other things about the plants, about the cultures, about the women. And he was fascinated by women because he was young and he was Italian. So I think that's quite a lot of the details of that kind.
Let's talk about one detail which he didn't include in the book or the book that his cellmate helped put together. He did not mention the Great Wall of China. What is the consensus among historians?
That's really interesting because I think that was the reason some historians said Marco Polo didn't really go to China. I don't think so. Personally, on that front, I think you've got to really, really look at the historical facts. Because, you know, the Great Wall of China was first of all built 200 AD, BC, by the first emperor of China when he united China. But what was the Great Wall? The wall wasn't, when it started, wasn't as we see today, very, very broad where horses, cars could run on it. No, just a wall and made of mud. And in the course of history, mud, you know, just melted and then crumbled. So when you go to the west of China, and you can still find these mud walls in the desert, really, really small. If you don't look for them, you would not recognize them as the Great Wall. But the wall that people, tourists, are familiar with, the only object people say that you can see from the moon, from the space, is actually very much later invention than Marco Polo's time. It was built and rebuilt in the 15th century by the Ming Dynasty, the Ming Emperor. And that was from 1421, for example. And that was 300 years behind Marco Polo. So it's no wonder that Marco Polo didn't really mention the wall as we see it today, because it wasn't probably, you know, there, or the stretches was much, much smaller than today.
Chinese historians are known for keeping meticulous records. How have Marco Polo featured in Chinese historical documents?
That's the other reason why people question Marco Polo's account, because there is no record of Marco Polo as far as we have found so far, directly saying, oh, the merchants of Venice called Marco Polo, stayed in the Mongol court, had such a role. No, not really, because I think that the meticulous record, when you look at Chinese history, we have a 24 annals history, which record each of the Chinese dynasty, you know, from the first emperor to the last emperor in 1911. But the detail of it doesn't really cover a single person, because for us, what is important, what are the important aspects of a government? It's not the coming and go. And besides, Marco Polo did not really perhaps play a very, very important role, or held a very high position in the Mongol court. So I wouldn't, you know, be surprised if we have a modern reference, right? In this day and age, they are what? They are over, I would say, just in Beijing alone, there are over 200,000 foreigners working, studying there every year, minimum. Mm-hmm. But how many do we have records of, both with the government or in this day of globalization on the internet? So I think it is, you can imagine, we are talking about 800 years ago. So I wouldn't say that is the main reason to question Marco Polo's travel in China.
Shuyun, I was wondering, as you produced the series, was it hard separating Marco Polo, the historical person, from Marco Polo, the myth?
I think that is a brilliant question. I think, yes, you are right. It is very, very hard to distinguish the two, because he has become, as we just discussed, there are so many accounts, so many versions of his book. So already, even in his lifetime, or very soon afterwards, they begin to be myths, all different versions of history. But I think what stood out, the test of time, or what has stood the test of time, is this man, and is the image he projects. I think as one of the Italian professor whom we interviewed said, you know, he must be the first global brand. And when you look at how his accounts, not only changed the European perception of other parts of the world, but also challenge and make them realize there are other cultures, there are other people who are just as sophisticated, if not more. And I think by understanding that culture, we begin to appreciate, instead of being very arrogant saying, we are the center of the world, I think by holding oneself as center of the world, that invites a lot of misunderstanding, and as a result, conflicts. So what Marco Polo has done is to be, of course, he was the man of his age. He was a Christian, very devout Catholic. So the way he looked at God and Islam and, you know, Confucianism or Buddhism, he took on a certain sort of view and perspective. But he was as open as he could be, you know, for a man of his age. And his attitude towards other cultures and people, I think, was quite enlightened for a man of his age. I think that kind of interaction, respect, and the, as I said, curiosity about other people, I think that is something we all have, and that is enduring legacy of Marco Polo.
Speaking of communicating across culture, you produce and direct many award-winning documentaries of China for a Western audience. What is the challenge in presenting China to a Western viewer?
Where do I start? It's really, really a challenge. I think partly because cultures are very, very different. I think not least today's China, which is politically, ideologically, and culturally very different from the rest of the world. But I think for me, there are more things in common, crossing cultures, crossing borders, even cross religions. I think people are fundamentally the same. I think it's looking for that similarity, sharing the differences, and that when there are differences, we look at it saying where we agree, where we don't agree. But what is so interesting about Marco Polo, despite the questions, the doubts of his journey, I think people of, you know, all time, of all countries, seem to regard him as this universal emblem of traveler, exploration, bravery, and curiosity. So I think that the peeling across time, age, and cultures of Marco Polo actually is very encouraging, because it encourages us to go beyond our narrow confines and look at other cultures, and instead of saying, that's not good as ours, but saying, wow, isn't that extraordinarily interesting? They are so different from our culture, yet they have created something so beautiful, so sublime, and so different. Then what is it? Then appreciate that difference, enjoy that difference, and trying to work together. I think that is perhaps a more, for me, the right attitude. And of course, it's difficult, because along this journey, when we were in Jerusalem, you know, the battles between in the Middle East, in Marco Polo's time, and today. And as I mentioned, in Iraq, and Marco Polo didn't really go and had to go around in order to avoid the ruins. And we had the same. And in Iran, we took at least 8 months to get permission to go in there. So, you know, when you talk about difficulties of traveling, let alone understanding a culture, it was huge in Marco Polo's time and in our time, but throughout the history, there have always a few, like Marco Polo, who broke down the barriers, embraced the differences, and brought people something genuinely, something to share. I think that's what I have been trying to do. through both the films and the books. But, you know, I hope the audience will have an opportunity to see the program and come to a conclusion themselves, because it was, and it is still, an extraordinary journey of extraordinary diversity and extraordinary beauty and sophistication. I think that is something, you know, people traveling would be able to find today. And that's what we try to convey in the film, but with much more depth and, I hope, insight.
You surely have a talent for making history very, very interesting. Thank you so much, Shi Yun, for speaking with us this evening.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Shi Yun Sun about Marco Polo, A Very Modern Journey, a three-part documentary on Al Jazeera. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.